Hi, good morning, folks. Welcome to this morning's session, and thank you for taking the time out to go through a tour of Azure with us. As John said, I'm the Technical Product Manager for Infrastructure as a Service within Azure. So what we'd like to do today is give you a very high-level overview of the extent of Azure, all the way from IaaS through PaaS and SaaS, and what that actually means for you. So what you can see on the screen right now is a poster that's available from the Azure website that lists all of the services. And I think this is a great place for us to start because it's where we'll finish. And by the end of this session, this poster will make a lot more sense to you. And in essence, what we're trying to say here is the extent of Azure is really the bottom half of the poster that you see with all of the services that make up Azure. So what we'll do is we'll talk about those specific services in relation to IaaS, PaaS, and SaaS as we go on, and then we'll end up with this slide, which will make a lot more sense to you. So how are we going to achieve that? Let's go and have a look at the agenda that we want to have a look at today. And so what we start off with, what Microsoft's value proposition or what its design principles are, or what we overall, what is the sort of the mark that we are aiming for in Azure. And I think it's very clearly to produce an enterprise-grade, hybrid and open cloud platform that delivers the broadest cloud services to enable customers to innovate and to have operational efficiencies or reduce total cost of ownership for infrastructure. So having said that, what we're going to do is take each of those important parts, hybrid and open, and explain what that means from an Azure perspective. Then we'll talk about what broadest cloud services from an Azure perspective means and what enterprise grade. And that's really the Azure platform all up and the differentiators of how we differentiate Azure from any other cloud services. That infrastructure, what does it do for you? What does it enable you to do? And we'll go through a number of scenarios that are listed under two primary sections: extend your data center, how do you take what you've got on-premise, and how do we acknowledge the value that you and on all the effort that you've placed in your on-premise data center, and how do we extend it into Azure to enable innovation or reduce costs. And then we'll take that from the infrastructure as a service side into the PaaS side and look a little bit more at the data platform. And then at the end, what we'll do is we'll have a look and say, okay, well, we've talked a little bit about IaaS and PaaS and SaaS, but we really shouldn't think of Azure as a limited individual component of either it delivers IaaS or either it delivers PaaS. It actually is all about building services. And in the first slide, you saw the bottom half of the slide was made up of a collection of services, about 60 services. And really, if you think about it like a box of Lego, if you have a business problem or a design principle in mind, it's how you assemble those components to develop a business solution to a technology or innovation problem. You know, one of the challenges for any organization now, especially within cloud, is the speed of innovation, of technology innovation. How do I capture that and translate it into business innovation? So let's go and have a look at what that story might look like. And we'll start with some background information. We talk about, okay, those three broad areas that define Azure. Let's go and have a look at them, and we'll start with hybrid. So what does hybrid actually mean? Well, hybrid means it's an and discussion, not an or discussion. What do I mean by that? If we look at our competitors like Amazon or Google, the answer to every question is, yes, you can run that in the public cloud. Yes, you can run that in the public cloud. And where that may be your solution, we've also obviously got Azure. But unique to Microsoft outside of any other vendor is that we come from a enterprise-rich on-premise environment where most customers have some form of data footprint or data center footprint. And we want to make this concept of hybrid being able to connect your data center into Azure and view it and manage it, as you can see at the top here, manage it through a single pane of glass, and it looks and feels like one data center. And the way that we sort of achieve that, first of all, is to enable management and connectivity. So if you think about the first thing that you would want to do if you had a data center on-premise and you didn't want to continue to invest in the hardware and the capital expenditure associated with that, what you would do is look to go to the cloud in order to get the economies of scale that cloud offers us. And we'll talk about the Azure scale a little bit later. And essentially, the first place that you would do that is with a connection, a site-to-site connection. So connecting your data center into Azure's data center, and you would need a high-speed MPLS connection for that, and that's where we have ExpressRoute. So we offer that kind of connection. We also offer two other types of connection, secure machine-to-machine and site-to-site connection. That is going via the internet rather than a dedicated channel into Azure. So we offer flexibility of connection at that network layer. We also offer flexibility of connection at the application layer, where, for example, you may have on-premise legacy applications that are running on an AS400 or running on some kind of infrastructure that you cannot take to the cloud, but yet you want to expose that part of your business to the new innovations of things like mobile and media and IoT. And so you want to change the relationship with your customer, but you don't want to have to move that mission critical piece of infrastructure that can't go to the cloud. And so from that perspective, we've got this concept of a service bus and BizTalk services, which will allow you to connect into the from your on-premise application into Azure and take advantage of the extensive services that exist within that. And we'll talk a little bit more about that when we talk about extending your data center. Obviously, we provide data synchronization at a SQL Server level, so you can have on-premise SQL databases being replicated into Azure. We also do that at an identity level. So, for example, you can federate your domain with Azure and therefore get the benefits of the fact that Azure is federated with some 2,800 other cloud vendors so that you can gain the benefit of things like single sign-on and multi-factor authentication for users inside your organization, or in fact, who are accessing applications from outside your organization, to ensure that you're having the right people access components in your data center and in Azure. And of course, as a very strong component, we also offer a combined monitoring and management infrastructure that spans both on-premise and Azure. And so that makes us uniquely different in that pretty much any other cloud vendor only offers one level of connectivity, which is that at the base here, which is network connectivity. It is true that Amazon can provide connectivity at all of that, but at each layer, they require another vendor to do that. And so the benefit with Microsoft is it's all one support phone call. When something goes wrong, you phone the help desk, and irrespective of whether it's a network problem, whether it's an identity problem, or whatever the case may be, you have one vendor and one sort of throat to choke, if you like. So that's hybrid from the perspective of connecting data centers together. We also hybrid in the sense that although we have the largest footprint of any public cloud provider from a data center perspective, so we are twice the size of Amazon and five times the size of Google in terms of having data center footprints in 19 regions around the world, where we don't have those regions, we also want customers to be able to have the benefit of Azure. And so what we provide is Azure in a box, essentially, which is providing in your data center, you've got compute, storage, and network, and then you throw Windows Server and System Center on the top of that, together with Windows or Azure Pack, and essentially you are your own mini version of Azure now. As you can see, the interfaces for administrators and customers looks and feels exactly the same as Azure. So that idea that a service provider running this would look to you as if it was exactly like Azure and offer you all of the services that we've just talked about in terms of hybrid connectivity, management, and all of those sorts of things. We are also hybrid from the perspective that we provide this all in a box. So actually, setting up Windows Server and System Center looks a little bit like this network diagram that you've got here. There are various components that offer management, that offer monitoring, management of virtualization, automation, and service management. And essentially what the CPS is a rack that has all of that pre-installed, pre-configured, and actually is entirely managed by Microsoft. So you never actually run software updates on the Windows components or the System Center components. We update that for you, and it's directly connected to Azure so that you've got that consistent framework from your on-premise into Azure. So we give you choice. And essentially, that choice meets you where you are today, whether you are very ready to be going into cloud or whether you're just sort of dipping your toe into the pond. There are elements that will allow you to do that, and we'll go through some examples in a minute. So we say that we offer the broadest cloud services, and in fact, let's just make sure we all understand what those services are. If we look at it from this perspective in terms of looking at private cloud, so your on-premise data center, obviously you own all the hardware, the network, the storage, you own the hypervisor layer, whether it be Hyper-V or VMware, you own the databases, the runtimes, the application, and you manage those. When you move to infrastructure on a service, this is Azure in the dark part at the bottom and you are in the light part at the top. We own and maintain and manage all of the hardware, the virtualization hypervisor, and you manage the operating system and the application that runs on top of that. So you don't have to worry about any of the hardware or anything like that. When we talk about platform as a service, we run all of that plus, let's say, for example, your application was SQL.exe. We run SQL.exe, the runtime. You run the application and connect it to a database. Obviously, with something like software as a service, like Office 365, we run and maintain everything. All you can do is change the reading pane or the look and the feel of how you access that component. So I just wanted to make sure that we all understand the difference between that, because Microsoft is the only provider that offers solutions in all four. If you're Google, you started at platform as a service. If you're Amazon, you started at infrastructure as a service. We provide a full range of infrastructure through platform and software as a service to meet you where you are. And of course, we are the only leader in the Magic Quadrants for all five of the Gartner Magic Quadrants associated with infrastructure as a service, platform as a service, server virtualization, identity, and enterprise and public cloud storage. We are open from the perspective of open source. So what we're trying to say here is we deliberately changed the name from Windows Azure to Microsoft Azure because Linux is a first-party member of our ecosystem. There's no difference in starting up a virtual machine of Windows Server 2012 than there is of a Linux operating system. And again, as we look at all of these components, you see that we give you choice. We allow you to bring your own development environment, whether it be something like Eclipse or whether you're using Visual Studio. We are open to SQL and Hadoop and Oracle and Mongo and MySQL DBs. We provide management and development of mobile device applications across all platforms, from Android to Windows Phone, as well as to Apple. We also have multiple content management systems and multiple development language that you can use on our platform. So we are open and flexible, and that really helps organizations who are trying to take that technology innovation that's happening so quickly and turn that into business innovation, whether it be through reducing costs or changing relationships with customers or gaining market access. It doesn't matter what it is. If we are open and we provide you the ability to bring whatever you've got, then we are more flexible and more likely to be able to be relevant to your business requirements. And of course, we are open from the fact that we have a new marketplace. A marketplace is where you would go to purchase a virtual machine or purchase a virtual appliance like a Barracuda device or a big IP5 device which you can plug into your network. We also therefore being able to purchase data from different organizations. So for example, people like Dun & Bradstreet, if you're looking at big data analysis, how can I automatically through my Azure portal purchase data and feed it into my big data analysis? Another element of that is this is where you can sell your data. Maybe you've got some data that you think other organizations would be able to bring into their big data discussion, and so you can sell that. So the new Azure marketplace is really where we're bringing together all the concepts of VM Depot and web applications and where you can have a relationship with external vendors that are also certified and built into the Azure portal. So that's from the perspective of broadest cloud services. We are also enterprise grade. What do we mean by that? Well, without a shadow of a doubt, this is what we mean by we are the largest footprint provider around the world. So we have 19 regions around the world. We've just announced two new data centers that will be opening up in India, and of course there are many more being planned at the moment. So this actually makes us the third largest telco network provider, if you like, in the world, as well as being the largest from a data center footprint perspective, twice the size of Amazon and five times the size of Google. What that means is that at each one of those locations, if we drill a little bit deeper, each one of those regions will have two data centers that are paired together for disaster recovery, and they are no more than 500 or 400 miles, no less than 400 miles apart from a disaster perspective. Now, each one of those data centers has buildings which are twice the size of jumbo jets, and each one of those locations can have 16 of those buildings. Now, in each of those buildings, there's around 600,000 servers. So that means globally, in our data centers, we've got about 11.4 million servers under management at this moment in time. We are also enterprise grade from the perspective that we have certification and compliance that run across the breadth of all Azure services. And of course, if you look in the bottom right-hand corner, we recently announced that we are now ISO 27018 certified, and we are the first cloud provider that is globally certified for this ISO standard. And we think that's very important for customers who have got questions around security and compliance. And so that roadmap in terms of any new certifications that we'll be gaining is available on the Microsoft website, and you can have a look at that to make sure that we are compliant with the regulatory body that is important to you. When we look at providing compute resources in our data center, we have the D family of servers, which are 60% faster than the original CPUs that we had. You can have up to 112 gigabytes of memory per virtual machine and local SSD storage. We've just announced a couple of months ago the G-Series or Godzilla series, which are the single largest VMs that you can purchase in any cloud provider at launch. So what we're talking about is one VM will have 448 gigs of memory, up to 32 CPUs, and 6.5 terabytes of local SSD storage that operates at around about sort of 50,000 IOPS because we've got premium storage as a new offering there. So this is typically for those organizations that need to run really compute and IOPS intensive workloads in the cloud. Any financial organizations doing things like Monte Carlo analysis, it's what we use for our media encoding services. So you can imagine that when we streamed the Sochi Olympics, we had sort of 43 live streams from cameras coming directly into the Azure data center. And then that information being encoded into 1080p and the various different formats that are required, and you need a lot of CPU and a lot of speed for that. And so we were using these massive VMs to produce that, about 1,000 at once. So we have premium storage, giving you a guaranteed SLA of above 50,000 IOPS. We have also recently announced Docker integration, where you will be able to if you think about this, it's like VMs inside VMs, or for any of you that go back to an NT4 sort of environment where we were running 16-bit applications on 32-bit infrastructure, you would remember the NTVDMs. If you think about it about like that, that explains what Docker is. It's an environment that developers like to use to take maximum advantage of the resources they've got and spin up virtual machines very, very quickly. And so that is going to be integrated into the Windows platform. Okay, so I think we've had a look at that in terms of being hybrid, being enterprise grade, being the broadest cloud services. Those are what differentiate us from any other cloud service provider. But what does that mean for you? Well, here are some solutions that we're going to talk about where you can bring the power of everything that we've just been talking about together to reduce your costs and enable innovation. So let's go and have a look at some of these at an individual level. So we've talked about this concept of connecting your data center to our data center, and there are two methods that you can use to do this. You can connect to an exchange provider. An exchange provider would be like an Equinix provider or somebody like that, where they've already got a connection to Azure and you are co-located with them. So you just connect into them, and now you have a high-speed connection to Azure, and Azure is obviously connected out either to your data center or to the public internet, depending upon what you're trying to do. The other way is connecting directly from your data center or your customer's site or your site directly straight into Azure, not using a service provider. That's up. Those are the two methods that you can configure those connections. So we've talked about hybrid identity. This is really important. It's a concept, and it's a great, for me, in many cases, the next step in sort of a movement to the cloud. The first thing is to lay down that network and that connectivity. The second thing is to make sure that you know who's accessing those resources, as well as extending your Active Directory out to other cloud providers so that you can enable your users to access applications not necessarily from internally in your corporate LAN, but from externally in a very secure way with single sign-on and multi-factor authentication. So what that actually means is taking your Windows Server Active Directory environment and having it replicated into Windows Azure. And there's two methods of doing that. One where the password is stored in Azure as a double hashed password, which obviously nobody can see. The other is to never install it in Azure and only always keep it on your on-premise Active Directory. That's a security requirement from your perspective and an ease of access, but both methods exist for you to do that. And so you would imagine that you are connected to Azure. Azure is connected to Salesforce and Amazon and Box and all of those other cloud providers. So an example of how this might work would be Johnny Random, the user, is logging on a Monday morning onto your on-premise location. They hit Control-Alt-Delete, a username and password, get authenticated by your Active Directory. Their desktop gets presented to them, and there's a Salesforce icon in the top left-hand corner. They double-click on that, and it immediately goes through Windows Azure Active Directory, goes in and authenticates you via single sign-on into your Salesforce portal, so that concept, as well as multi-factor authentication. So your phone rings to make sure that you're not somebody that's trying to fish that access and expose your Twitter account or something like that. Twitter is also federated with Microsoft. So hybrid, extending your data center for enterprise applications. We talked about this where you may have applications that are either legacy or on mainframes or applications that you don't want to move anywhere near the cloud, but you want to take advantage of the things that we've just talked about, like mobile phone apps for customers to access those resources or for your internal people to access them or for partners to be able to communicate with you. And the way that you would do that is leave your on-premise environment, install a BizTalk server on-premise, and then use Azure Service Bus and the BizTalk services. Notice not BizTalk server. We've basically taken that BizTalk server and made it a multi-tenant service in the cloud so that you can connect to that, and that brokers the relationship with these components. And so you can extend innovation to legacy apps. And you see some organizations across the top here that have done that from a case study perspective. We are also provide you the ability to do proactive monitoring on your environment. So irrespective of what monitoring you use internally in your data center, whether it be Operations Manager or Splunk or something like that, the idea behind this is that only provides you with the ability to do reactive maintenance. You get an alert when something fails. Operational Insights is taking the concept of business intelligence and pulling together logs from all your various different servers and hardware that are on-premise and in the cloud, and providing you the ability to dig deep into that data and do predictive analytics so that you can start to pick up indicators that might point to a fault that will happen in the future. And so that's that concept of operational insights, a really important component of extending your data center. Something that's very important and that a lot of people are talking about is this concept of DevOps, where you have some developers within your environment that need to have the ability to start up test and dev environments. I never try to use the word test and dev as a standalone. I always think the only reason that you do dev and test is so that you can put something into production. And so you don't want to have an environment where you do dev and test that's different to the way that you monitor and maintain stuff once it's in production. And of course, Microsoft provides you a single solution from the concept from the developer's perspective all the way through to how IT administers those those test environments. So from the concept of having the developer using Visual Studio, building and testing it using Visual Studio Online and the release management within it, and then deploying that using Windows Server System Center or PowerShell, and then using System Center to manage that, as well as Application Insights, which we've just talked about. But of course, we said that we're open, and we know that a lot of people want to use things like GitHub. They want to use things like Chef and Puppet. And so, of course, we integrate completely with those. So we offer you the ability to use different development environments, to use different tools for build and test and deploy that are integrated with Windows Azure and are first-party members of that environment. And so we've got Puppet and Chef from a release management and Nagios from a monitoring perspective that we will integrate with GitHub and CodePlex from a developer's resource perspective. So again, that concept of being open and flexible to meet you where you are. Azure Site Recovery. Now, Azure Site Recovery gives us the ability to use Azure as a control plane, if you think about it. So let's say you've got two on-premise locations. And you know, you've got data center 1 and data center 2. Data center 2 is your failover from a disaster perspective. What you can use is you can use Azure to control the failover and failback between those two environments using Azure Site Recovery. And you can do zero impact testing on that to make sure that those recovery plans are working. And that's what you do. You create a recovery plan, which is essentially just basically a runbook that is automated based upon a threshold violation. So you're using operational insights to monitor your on-premise environment. It detects a violation. It fails that function over into your data center in a structured and organized way, and it continues to monitor that and then fails it back once that problem is resolved in your original data center. And that's how you can use Azure Site Recovery. Very importantly, that works across hypervisors. So you may be in an environment where you have VMware on-premise, you have AMI format or Amazon, you're using some Amazon components. You can use, we purchased a company called Image, which we are using in building into Azure Site Recovery, which will allow you to replicate and do disaster and do backup and disaster recovery into Azure. So you can imagine you've got an on-premise location, you've got some resources running in Amazon, and you're literally replicating that into Azure without shutting down, so across different hypervisors, and you can maintain and manage failback and fail forward in all of these environments. We obviously also have something called Store Simple, which allows you to reduce your storage costs by having an appliance on site that manages aging and stores the aged data in Azure. I'm just aware of time. So that's a sort of extend your data center component. When we look at big data, we divide it up into three sections: how we capture and manage that data, how we transform and analyze that data, and then how you use that data to visualize and decide. And again, you'll see here that we capture diverse data. So we are open for Azure HD Insights, analytics platform. We go through DocumentDB. We can achieve elastic scale through massive VMs and failovers. We can achieve maximum performance and SLAs. And again, we can simplify with cloud by having your data stored in Azure. We can transform and analyze. And so we've got this concept of understanding the past, which is Azure Data Factory, which brings all your data together and allows you then also to do Azure Stream Analytics, which is analyzing what you've got, and then machine learning, which is predictive analytics that is available to Azure to be able to do the types of things that we were talking about with Azure Automation. And then, of course, how we visualize and decide on that data, how we interact with that data as an end user. We use things like Power Query and Power Pivot or Power BI, depending upon whether you're going to have a look at faster insights to data. We're connected to on-premise. We've seen that before. And of course, we've enabled the data culture in terms of being able to drill through and democratize data access to everybody in your organization so that they can make decisions based upon data rather than pure intuition. And so that's this concept of looking at at the two different approaches in terms of extending your data center, that IaaS discussion, and then using much of what we discussed in the concept of data analytics is all about the big data approach. Now, the important thing that we need to remember here, and I'm actually going to just jump forward to another slide at this. I won't move forward to that slide because we'll get there in a minute. Is the fact that if you remember the first slide that we looked at, which had all of those boxes of individual services, let's have a look at how we can take that approach a little bit further, because essentially the Internet of Things or Microsoft's approach to IoT is building on that infrastructure and platform components. Let's have a look at what that might look like. So what we're saying here is you may have devices on your edge network. Now, whether they be the back office things, all of the devices that you've got on your edge network that provide you data. So they collect data and they can store it in table format and blob. They might store it in a SQL database. They might store it in MongoDB or DocumentDB. It doesn't matter what you store it in. We want to apply rules to that in command and control so that you can enable your business. So the concept here is there are devices that are out there on your internet. There may be things like sensors in your manufacturing location. You're going to collect data from that in stage two. You're going to run a rule against that. And to do that, you use one of those services called an event hub. Now, event hub is a bidirectional command and control component that receives information from a sensor and sends control back to it. The sensor might say it's 70 degrees. The control part is you need to stop and reduce that to 65. And so the way that we do that is by connecting it to that big data, the machine learning, using HD insights, and we're using a Power BI to interrogate that and those sorts of things. So the concept is building those services by amalgamating the blocks that Azure provides in order to build a solution to a business problem. Mobile solutions. So we said, for example, that one of the benefits is that you can develop for iOS, Android, and Windows all on the same platform. That you can then start to take, in the mobile solutions, you can start to take advantage of Azure Active Directory. So we talked about that idea of using Azure or synchronizing your directory services with Azure. And of course, once you do that, when you start to access mobile phone applications, you can use those as single sign-on functions as well. So for example, everybody in Microsoft has to have multi-factor authentication to access any of the internal applications that Microsoft publishes and that we can access on our mobile phones. And so this is what our mobile services look like, the concept of that you've got a software development environment that you can use from the Windows Store to develop for your Windows environment as well as your mobile environment, and have those appliances access your mobile back-end application, elements of your back-end application through the REST API. And you can access information that's stored in SQL and Blob and Mongo. You can access applications like Google or Twitter or Facebook and take advantage of multi-factor authentications. And then you can also push information out to that to enable that sort of IoT and notification hubs and push notification to customers. It's sort of a platform that will change the way that your customers interact and your business interacts with you. We also have media services. Now, media services made up of cloud storage, encoding packages, protecting your content through digital rights management, putting that information onto a content delivery network so that you can have live streaming, as well as end user client applications that will play those media services. So if you think about this from a Sochi Olympics perspective, we had a whole lot of people filming things on the left all around the various different venues in Sochi. That information was being streamed into a data center and stored in some storage. It was then passed up to Azure to be encoded. It was then rights managed so that only people who were allowed to access that content could access that content in terms of being able to be a paid provider and so on. We put that content onto the content delivery network and streamed it out to the globe, to people accessing that stream through their clients. And so that's the Windows Azure Media Services as well. And so what we can do is live on-demand streaming, solutions for marketing and advertising, for the way in which you want to expose your company's marketing plans to external resources. And also very importantly, and we find a lot of usage around this as well, in terms of employee portals and enterprise videos for large organizations running town hall meetings and things like that for global multinationals. So this takes us back to where we actually initially started from. And I think it's a really good point to just pause and bring everything together before we move on to the summary and wrap up of this section and then the any questions that may exist. So what you see here is when we've been talking about some of those solutions like disaster recovery or mobile solutions, you see them at these four big blocks across the top. And what's very important to notice is that pretty much every single one of these four blocks is simply made up of services that exist in the compute or the networking or the data or the analytics or the media, and they pull those things together to provide, to build a solution. And that's sometimes why I think it's very useful to think of Azure as a box of chocolates or a big box of Lego. And then understanding your business problem, you can use things like the networking function and the event hub and the data storage and the mobile services to connect those elements together. So those are pre-configured, totally maintained services by us, and you simply connect them together to give you a desired outcome. And I think that's a very powerful way. I think thinking of Azure as IaaS, PaaS, or SaaS is a great way to initially engage with Azure to say, hey, I want to start a virtual machine, that's IaaS. Hey, I want to do some software as a service stuff, that's Office 365. I want to start some website applications, which are PaaS-based implementations. That's an initially a good way. But once you start to look at it as a solution that enables innovation and reduces cost across all elements of your data center, what you start to see is the sum of the total is greater than its individual components. And to emphasize that a little bit more, let's look at it like this. Here are all of these services. And based upon whether you have a need to extend your data center because you don't want to be able to, you don't want to be investing in hardware anymore in your own data centers and take advantage of the cheap compute and storage in Azure because we have massive economies of scale of 11.4 million servers under management. We can produce and provide that storage and compute power at a much lower cost of purchase than you can. And so the concept of that is that reduced cost component. But that's, again, just a one element of it. It's also about what it enables for your business and how that can change your business by enabling innovation, by sort of, say, for example, having a relationship if you, let's say, you sell cars. Imagine a scenario where your salesperson doesn't have to see that customer once every 10 years when they want to buy a new car, that because you've developed a mobile application for your brand, when that person is driving past, the car's 3 years old, and they're driving past a service station, and it quickly tells your mobile phone, pops up with a piece of toast that says, hey, your battery in your car needs replacing in the next 50 kilometers, and you've just passed a whatever the brand of car, a BMW service station that's offering cheap batteries today. And so the concept is you're changing your relationship with your customer by providing them real-time access to data and analytics and pushing out information to that customer. And so the example here is exactly the same. It's this idea of deciding what your business problem is. Let's say you need to develop a new app and pull together the elements of storage or network and compute and data analytics and operating systems that you need to address that problem. And of course, the Azure roadmap will outline, and it's something that we publish on the Azure website now, that will indicate what we are planning to produce in terms of new services. So if you think about the bottom of that slide, it's almost got like 60 services on it. You can think that there's going to be another 30 or 40 services added to that in the next 6 to 12 months. And so that portfolio of services that you can build technology solutions to business problems with becomes greater and greater. And so that's where I would like to sort of pause, giving us 15 minutes to have discussions and questions. But I'd like to do that by just rounding off by going all the way back to really the very first slide that we had and summarizing the discussion so far and then opening it up to questions. So just starting with this agenda slide, what we said was, what differentiates Microsoft in terms of how it's approaching cloud? Well, it's to produce an enterprise-grade hybrid and open cloud platform that delivers the broadest cloud services that enables innovation and operational efficiencies for customers. And so we drill down into what hybrid and open means, the ability to connect your data center from on-premise into the cloud across different flavors of operating systems or development environments or monitoring and management tools. So we provide an open platform that meets you where you are, that bring your data center as it is today. We also offer the broadest cloud services and are the only a cloud service provider in all five of the magic quadrants from a Gartner perspective. We are enterprise grade from the perspective of being offering the single largest VMs. We are enterprise grade from a security and compliance perspective. And then we looked at then specific solutions that take those principles and enable you to reduce costs and enable innovation. And so we talked about extending your data center with things like enterprise application integration and identity, with things like DevOps as an environment that operates across premises and across operating systems and development environments like Unix and Linux and Puppet and Chef and Visual Studio and System Center that all operate on that single platform. We can use it as a disaster recovery and site recovery perspective. We also then talked about how we can interact with big data and capture and manage data from all sorts of environments. And then we can transform and analyze that so that people can interact and visualize and decide against that data. An example of bringing all of that together was IoT, where you've got devices that are capturing data and putting it into any kind of storage and then visualizing and deciding and sending control and command signals back to your device to up the temperature or down the temperature in your facility or whatever the case may be. Then we said, well, you know, these are some great examples, but in the long run, what you don't want to do is think about Azure just like IaaS or PaaS or SaaS. What you want to think about it as is a set of building blocks or Lego bricks that you can pull together to construct a solution to a business problem. So with that, that's the session from start to finish. What I'd like to now do is open it up to some questions and answers.